This is International Insights, conversations with experts and entrepreneurs on principles of management and leadership, produced by Dr. Joe Shkembri from the Faculty of Economics, Management and Accountancy.
Welcome to International Insights, stories from the real economy. My name is Joe Shkembri. Many of us think of Africa as the vast continent, somewhat underdeveloped and the source of migration to Europe. Well, there is another way of looking at the 54 African countries. Africa is the world's largest free trade area and a 1.2 billion person market. It is the fastest growing continent in economic terms, and in the more stable countries like Ghana, Ethiopia, and Rwanda, economic growth far exceeds the fastest growing economies in Europe. No wonder European companies, not just from former colonial powers, but even from Malta, are looking at Africa as their next frontier. Our guests today lead two Maltese companies that have been active in Africa for years. Chris Muscat is the CEO of Hudson Holdings, that distributes Nike and other top brands to 24 countries in Africa, and Carl Aquilina of Salvo Grima, a company that runs a logistics operation employing 80 people in Rwanda. Chris Muscat, Carl Aquilina, I look forward to our discussion of why leading companies are off to Africa. Carl, Chris, great to have you here on International Insights to share with us your experience in doing business in Africa. I'll start straight away with, you know, a bit of an introduction of what your companies, you know, do and have been doing in Africa for the last few years. Carl.
First of all, thanks for having us. Great to be here, Joe. So basically, as a group of companies, we've been active in, let's say, Africa since the early 80s, like many other companies. You know, the first, let's say, experience was going to Libya. That was, let's say, the generation before the current generation in the business. We are in two different areas mostly. The first is distribution of FMCGs, where we basically distribute for multinationals such as Unilever, BAT, and these kind of companies. And the second area is in travel retail, where we basically operate what you would call a duty-free shop, what you would expect to see in an airport or a seaport, mm-hmm. in places where people travel. Mm-hmm. So those are our two. Let's say.
And where about in Africa, Carl?
So our footprint basically today is Libya, Tunisia, Rwanda, and Djibouti, and obviously we're looking at also potentially other countries to enter. Mostly focused around East Africa at the moment.
Great. Okay, Chris, you have a long history in Africa.
Yes. First of all, good morning and thanks for having us. Okay. We've been doing business in Africa for a decade. Actually, our first foray to Africa, believe it or not, was Nigeria. So it's a long story, but cut to the chase. Alfie was our founder, pitched for Morocco, and instead of giving him Morocco, they gave him Nigeria. They said, it's still Africa. Okay. You know? The difference is very big between them. But we've been doing business over there, Nigeria, for probably a decade, okay, in and out. So we went as distribution managers, okay. to assist a local company. But basically our business is, we are distributors, primarily we're distributors of sporting goods, okay. of brands, exactly. sportswear brands, okay? So our biggest one is Nike, mm-hmm. where we're distributed to around 34 countries in Africa.
Africa, okay.
Okay, and we do other sports brands, we do Converse, we do Vans, North Face.
And you've been distributing Nike and others in Africa for many years already, no?
Yes, so coming to that. But first we started as distribution managers.
Okay.
So first we're the third party in between, mm-hmm. okay, the local, the brand, and we were the managers in between.
Okay.
This didn't succeed, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. because what happens is the local partner suddenly thinks he's strong enough to go directly with the brand.
Okay.
And they start messing up everything, so we have to intervene, and then the brand ultimately took the decision and said, look, we work directly with you guys, you set up the business directly, we don't deal okay. anymore with the local partners.
Yeah.
So at least we proved our expertise on that, so now we are directly the distributors for these countries.
Exactly.
Okay. So our majority of business is sports, which is probably around 60% of our business and distribution, but we also do retail.
Okay.
So we have direct operations in Morocco, in Algeria, and in Nigeria, where we operate retail. In Morocco, got around 21 stores.
Okay.
We do fashion, we do sports, so we do Mango, we do Tommy, we're opening Calvin Klein. We obviously have Nike stores, we have Urban Jungle, our own franchise. So we have quite a significant
presence. And at the retail side, you manage yourself from here?
We do. No, we have offices in countries. So Morocco, we've got about 150 people.
Okay.
In Algeria, a smaller team. We've got only 3 stores at the moment, another 2 opening, but an office of around 20 people, plus the retail staff. And Nigeria, we opened our first 2 stores this year. We opened a Nike store and an urban jungle in Lagos.
Okay.
So I have an office and obviously retail complement.
Yeah. Okay. Quite an extensive operation, no, that goes.
We were in Libya extensively. We had around 20 stores we used to manage because it's a different setup in Libya, which obviously we've stopped everything there for a couple of years now. And now we're going to Kenya. So we're venturing into Kenya now. So what we want to do is, these are our footholds into Africa. So we use them to be direct retail, but we can't be direct retail everywhere. It's too widespread.
And was it a transition like from your experience in Libya to Africa, or did Africa happen independently?
No, it happened independently.
Okay.
Libya was a totally different. Libya was management of retail, pure retail.
Okay.
And different operations, fashion, sports, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We've been in Algeria for a long time, 2006, again, with local partners.
Okay.
Doesn't work out.
Okay.
So we have to go direct. Now we are with a local partner, but very strict on. So one of the learnings, pre-anticipating, is you need to select your partner very well.
Okay.
And you need to have it contractually, even though the contract is for, you say, time and everything, it is for when it goes bad. That's the
exactly
place, okay?
Exactly. And today, of course, you have partners in all these different places, so you've learned a lot on how to deal with people and situations on the ground.
Every situation is different, so I wish to say we learned it.
Okay.
We still learn every time.
Okay.
So we're direct in Morocco alone, in Nigeria we're direct alone.
Mm-hmm.
In Nigeria we cannot, because of the local legislation does not allow you.
Okay.
So there we are, have a partner.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the fit of the partner is nearly more important than anything else. Not what he does, not which feet he's worked in.
Mm-hmm.
It is the character, the fit of the person.
And that's kind of down to the person and the kind of rather than the company he represents.
Down to the person.
We're going to come to that, and that's very, very interesting. I want to hear a little bit from Carl how you guys started in Africa, because you're a much more kind of a much more recent story.
Sure. No, as I said, obviously we had the history very similarly in Libya, but then it wasn't really. It did not lead on to other. Libya was a kind of its own story. It did not lead on to other markets. So, what happened was we were, let's say, wanting to grow in the distribution space, and obviously we had, let's say, key relationships with some multinationals, and it was an opportunity very similar to what you said. So we're pitching for one country, and they said, no, you know, we're not going to give you that country, but you can try. In this case, you can, you know, we want a distributor for Rwanda, for example.
Okay. So this came up. The client came up with
the supplier came up with the country. So we were intending a different country, but we very happily ended up with a great country, and then we grew it from there. So then, rather than going wide, we went deep. So we said, okay, we're going to set up in Rwanda in this case, and the country is really the kind of place you want to invest in. So then we said, okay, if we can distribute A, we can distribute B, C, and D
from the same base in Rwanda.
Exactly, and we've grown that base. We've grown that base, and today we have 80 people in Rwanda. You know, we have warehouses all across the country, and we can distribute a range of products, all FMCG. So obviously, we're not distributing fridges and stuff. You know, it has to be kind of, you know, it has to make sense, has to fit.
Mm-hmm.
And that obviously, that success in Rwanda has given us the opportunity to look at other countries, because obviously, once you do a good job in one place, then your supplier, your principal says, okay, if you're doing a good job here, you can do a good job somewhere else.
And even you grow in confidence as well. That
you start to figure out what works, what doesn't work, you know, but every country is very different to the other, even when it comes to partners. So in Rwanda, we don't have a partner.
Okay.
We're there directly. But other countries, obviously, depending on legislation, you need to have a partner or not.
Exactly. But I wanted to ask you,
sure,
you know, from your experience and Chris as well, you know, what makes, I don't know, North Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa or Francophile Africa or Anglophile Africa kind of different? Because we tend to think of Africa as one.
I mean, it's a bit like the Americans say they're going to Europe, right?
Okay.
Like not making any distinction, like Europe is one place. I mean, Africa is extremely, you can't compare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's extremely diverse. So, you can't compare North Africa with Sub-Saharan Africa, with South Africa, with the West of Africa. I mean, it's all very different, the same as, you know, anywhere else, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, for us, it's very much, we look at a country in depth and specifically, you know, because each country is completely different to each
and
other.
And see, kind of to understand the
yes,
culture and
the culture, legislation, everything. I mean, you know,
what from your experience, Chris, what makes, you know, North Africa and South Africa and the other countries kind of different from each other and the way they do things on a daily basis, like?
One, it's mentality as well, and culture, most of Buddhist culture. Okay, so North Africa is Arab land.
Okay.
So it's known, and they look towards Europe. So they're. Okay. The whole aim of life is Europe. They want to copy Europe, they want to migrate towards Europe, you know, that is their goal. Mm-hmm. Maybe you talk to, if you to get, for example, Nike had tried to put the head office in South Africa.
Okay.
Because they thought they could manage Africa from South Africa. And they wanted to sponsor the Soweto Marathon and say, ah, this is for Africans, you know, we're doing for Africa. North Africans are absolutely not interested in South Africa.
Okay.
For them, it's a world apart. They live in totally different.
Exactly.
My frames are different. So the culture is very different. And Sub-Sahara is very different as well. Mm-hmm. So you get the west side, which is more Anglo. The far west is French, but you have Nigeria, which is very much Anglified. So obviously very connected to the UK and everything. Kenya, similarly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And the cultures are very different. I mean, Nigeria has 200 plus languages
exactly.
in one country.
Within the country.
It's not even a, even the country itself is, yeah. is more diverse than Europe. You
exactly.
know?
Exactly.
So,
which is the country from your experience or that of your colleagues, you know, is kind of most challenging to do business in Africa?
From our experience so far, has been Nigeria.
Okay.
I'd say that. But that is limited from what we do.
Exactly.
There are other countries we haven't even gone into because it's so difficult to get either foreign currency or even to get into work, so
where
I can't
the
say
the basics are not even in place.
I can only comment about where we've been, you know?
Exactly. And which has been kind of the easiest or kind of the most
Morocco.
Positive experience? Morocco,
yes. Morocco is easiest to set up and everything.
And why is that? Western. The legislation?
Legislation, so it's based on the French law, but the same, but they also attract foreigners. So their aim is to try and get a lot of FDI into the country.
Kind of they're used to, they're set up for
a lot of multinationals set up their base for Africa into Morocco, so this aeronautical, this production. Mm-hmm. You know, so they try and get foreigners.
Exactly.
The tax environment is not friendly, but they still at least to the base for them.
One thing which is very interesting is, and I guess the reason why a lot of companies are interested in Africa, in your case, you both represent, you know, principals who are kind of multinationals themselves, who obviously see a lot of potential in Africa. What has been your experience in terms of whether Africa is in reality, you know, an up-and-coming, very important market for every sector?
So with the principals, so let's take Nike consideration, something we do. So we attack Africa in two ways, okay? We have direct presence in some countries and we'll continue expanding, but we also do distribution. So we distribute to around 24 countries at the moment from the 34, because some of them, there's absolutely nothing inside there. But we have a bonded warehouse in Malta, so we get the product here and we can supply. So the principles, what they're looking for is partners who can do more than one territory.
Okay.
Because what they're doing is everywhere in the world, they're growing bigger, but they want to restrict it to fewer partners.
Yeah.
They squeeze you on the margin because you have more volume.
Exactly.
Okay, but they're giving you more territories. Mm-hmm. And for them, it makes their life more easier. Compliance,
dealing with
money laundering for them. And this is becoming more crucial than any other things. Okay. How your company is set up, doing everything right, AML procedures, everything, becomes even more important for the principals.
Okay,
so the fact that being in Europe helps us. Mm-hmm. So being based part of the EU really helps us from a legislation point of view and keeping a level. And from there we can go to Africa. So first of all, they see that we can handle more than one country. Mm-hmm. So for them, they had 10, 12 partners in Africa and they consolidated them.
Okay.
So now there are only two.
Exactly.
It's just Egypt and the rest of Africa is us and them directly in South Africa and beyond. Mm-hmm. So there's nobody else. So for them, they're getting that benefit. Mm-hmm. Of scale and ease of doing business for them.
Exactly. And I guess also they have their own research telling them that, you know, there's a middle class which is growing and therefore the kind of product you distribute will
so
be more
they come
demand
to the consumer. This is 1.2 billion people in Africa. Okay, it's diverse. It's not China's in one country or those diverse regions, but Africa's spread all over, but the population is very young.
Okay.
Average age expectancy is very low in Africa compared to Europe. Mm-hmm. Okay, so our target consumer bracket, especially us selling sports and everything, is prime for the brands because it is 18 to 30 is probably 60% of the population.
Is in that bracket, exactly.
So it's spot on for them. So they see this, but also the price point is silly because In most countries you have duties. In Morocco you have 40% duty.
Okay. Okay.
So the goods are more expensive, 20-25% more expensive than in Europe.
Okay.
So you're talking a nation where your average salary could be between 200 to 400 euros.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking the low, the retail, not if you talk office.
Exactly.
Morocco's could be even 2,000. Okay, well, you have the highest priced goods in the world, probably.
Okay.
So yes,
people consume because there's an aspiration and all.
But it's nowhere close to the levels of expectations of Europe. So if Nike say you sell $1 per person in the country, mm-hmm. 10 years ago, you will get nowhere close to that.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yet, obviously, they see this huge potential and the importance of partnering with people like you to actually kind of get to this kind of growing market. Yeah.
Which is something very similar. So let's say the companies we are distributing for, it's a very similar situation. So they want to deal with companies that do things right, you know, especially on the compliance, and that's very heavy. So, okay, it's a pain, but it's actually an advantage for companies like us, you know. And also they would like to deal with less partners, it's less complex. And we find they want to concentrate on what they are good at, which is, you know, manufacturing and marketing their products and coming up with new products.
Whereas they leave the distribution to a trusted party who's
exactly.
in the EU and yet has access.
Exactly. And also we are finding that, for example, in East Africa, it's called the East African Community, which is similar to the European Union, where obviously the East African countries, you know, collaborate, and they try and obviously encourage big companies to manufacture within the community.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the issue of import taxation is big, especially when products need to be affordable, because obviously the population still has a ways to go, you know, to have the spending power
exactly.
as you have in Europe. So, you know, what we are finding is more and more companies setting up manufacturing bases there
mm-hmm.
to kind of, you know, to invest in the country, but also to have to pay less import duties and make the product more affordable and work with distributors who are, you know,
serious.
So for us, these are all positive things and encourage us to invest even more.
I wanted to, you know, discuss a little bit as well the kind of setup you have in Africa. You, Carl, employ people in Africa in your distribution centers. Same with you, Chris, in not just your retail, but also your kind of distribution centers and all that. How do you find, you know, doing business with people in Africa in general? Again, you can't generalize, but what lessons have you learned in dealing with people from a meeting to anything else which you do?
As you said, obviously it varies differently. However, for example, if I had to mention Rwanda, it was an extremely good experience in the sense that, you know, the laws are pretty similar to ours, you know, you find excellent lawyers and, you know, you find all the big, you know, like PwC, and you find,
exactly.
you know, who work with the Malta, so, you know, we can work with
exactly.
the same people. So you find all of these services. So for us, it was about selecting the best possible advisors, you know, in the country to really get the best advice.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a very good experience, and not just in Rwanda. So obviously you need to be able to identify who to try and work with in a country. So we try and use, let's say, our Maltese lawyers to find out, you know, who should we work with in Djibouti, who should we work with
in terms of partners, who to work with?
No, in terms of legal advice.
Oh, okay.
You know, the partners is, as you said, the most critical thing, and it's the most difficult thing.
Because it's purely a judgment call.
It's a judgment, okay, obviously there's things you can do, but at the end of the day, it's the person, like you said, you know, you need to be able to, you have to have some common culture and values.
And you've had your stories, you know, of partnership going wrong, and then you found, you know, the right ones later.
Yes, we still have stories coming up.
Yeah.
We've had people, companies we've brought up from, they had two stores, we brought them up to a $60 million business.
Okay.
5 years. And
they grew to this extent.
And it's still ruptured because they still thought that they did not need further support, or they became bigger than us, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get this.
You always have that. And what's your kind of presence?
Not always. I can't say it's always. Okay, it happened once.
Exactly.
It happened all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So thank God it don't happen once. But it's a difficult one. It's not an easy one.
Like Carl was saying, choosing the right, you know, it's really about a person in the end, you know, and choosing that person on those partners on the ground becomes really difficult. In terms of employees, you know, and work ethic and all that, has it been?
I mean, it's diverse. Okay, so we've got a bit of a diverse. I would tell you education is good in most cases. People are willing, very willing to learn. So opposite of mortar, you find workforce, you find people ready to work. In fact, we should get some to train to mortar and everything. We should do something because it would be good for us because we need people and everything. But you find the workforce, you need to educate them, you need to train them. Sometimes you have to go, in certain cases, you have to go down to the basics. Because some cultures, they don't like saying no. They will tell yes to everything you tell them.
That's interesting.
Whether or not they really understood. So they will just say yes, yes, everything, not a problem. Then you actually ask them to repeat and you notice they're struggling a bit. So there is a difference, but normally you find pretty well educated people.
Your experience, Carl, has been the same.
It's all down to culture, right? So we also have business not in Africa. So you have obviously very, very large. I mean, with the workforce, for example, I would say in Rwanda it was a good experience in the sense that people are, if you get a very good level of education, you have people are very willing to work and very willing to kind of to learn the way you do things, and you know, especially if they've never done it before. So there was absolutely no issue with that. Obviously, there are cultural, they are very important cultural. So, as you said, in some places there is not really the culture to question. For example, right? So, if you are my boss and you are saying rubbish, right? I'm not going to tell you, you know. Or if I see a problem approaching, in some cultures, there isn't that, let's say.
The confidence to
it's not my place to tell you that's something. So the problem, you will know the problem when it hits, even if somebody knows it's
could
coming.
Have anticipated.
Just because culturally, some culture is not in your place to say.
And
that.
I guess it's partly training, partly understanding,
they don't
tolerating.
Us. They want to go to Europe everywhere you go to. You know, we speak to a guy in Nigeria. I'm doing my CCA because I want to go to the UK. Yeah, we just employed you. You know?
Yeah.
Why are you telling me you want to go to the UK?
Exactly.
You know? But for them, the dream is always Europe.
Exactly.
So far, the majority.
And foreign companies provide, if you like, this
training,
this
and we get in the scope. We get people. We try and bring people over, secondments and everything. It's a learning curve. It's a learning curve for us as well.
How should a company kind of prepare, no? Have some setup in place to be able to take Africa seriously because of these opportunities?
Deep pockets.
Deep pockets.
No, you have to have the willingness, I think, patience. Africa can't be, it's not a quick win.
Okay.
I wouldn't say accurate. I think our strength so far has been with doing it progressively.
Okay.
And you can't rush it because we've had instances where countries, they stop giving license to import. First, they implement a law saying you need a license to import, and they stop giving license to import for, in our case, it was 3 months. But there was a car industry in Algeria was stopped for 3 years. So if you rushed into it and you put all your eggs there, then obviously...
So you need the patience and the long-term approach.
You need that. You can't be one. I understand the model of going one country deep, but obviously for them in terms of investment, it's not significant for the group overall.
Yes.
Okay, so you can't put all your cash into one place.
If it goes wrong, it can't sink you as a group of companies.
Exactly.
And that's important.
Exactly.
So you need to spread it out. You need to do it progressively and everything, because there's always a curveball coming.
Absolutely. And obviously, you know, in markets that are kind of high return, if you like, there is a degree of high risk that comes in its very definition. Carl, what do you think?
From our point of view, what we did was we made sure we had people who really understood the country we were going to. So we made sure we acquired the right people. So, as in, for example, for Rwanda, we had a person who knew Rwanda very well, worked there before, you know, and we basically employed this person. And then, as I said before, you know, you want to have the right kind of advisors from the legal side, financial side. If you're not going in with a partner, make sure you really understand the laws and the history and you know, what could have gone wrong, you know, in the last 10 years. Has anything changed dramatically in the last 10 years, you know, from a legislation point of view, you know, because it could happen again.
Exactly.
And you have to have the courage to go and do it, basically.
Absolutely.
But, you know, at the end of the day, it's about, you know, you have to take the plunge and obviously you have to have a very strong business case. But as I said, you know, you have to be there on the ground with the right advisors, the right people. And then you can, I mean, obviously it depends on the country, but from our experience, you know, That's a major hurdle, you know.
And you, for example, are there in Rwanda a lot of the time, or?
Personally, yes I've been I don't know, 6-7 times.
No, but kind of you it's in your calendar to go often.
Of course, yes. I was there. I don't know when this is airing, but I was there last week.
Exactly.
And and there's a group of us. There's a group of 5 or 6 of us from the office in Malta who are there. Obviously, the aim is that our local management team. We don't want to build a situation where, you know, we're running show from Malta. It's not at all the. Mm-hmm. It is more about, you know, building a team in it's not just Rwanda. It's mm-hmm. also mm-hmm. we're doing similar things in other countries where we kind of try to build the capacity there.
Exactly.
So they are as self-sufficient as possible.
And
that will allow us to grow.
Not dependent on you.
Exactly.
But at the same time, your presence there is important.
Because they're perfectly capable of doing it. It's just a matter of trying to get the same culture and the same
Excellent.
Systems and the same
Absolutely.
Way of working, basically.
Yeah. And same with you, Chris. You go often because you need to be present there, or you have some other form of setup?
I mean, no, I've set up with teams which do go regularly. Mm-hmm. So normally every 3 months, there's at least one person from different business. Could be from the commercial side,
okay.
so the brands.
Okay.
It could be logistics,
yeah.
HR. They all go down.
Exactly.
So we need to go, and it's not important only for monitoring, but it's also important for the locals because they want to feel valued.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
people do like it. So when you go down.
It builds a relationship.
Builds a relationship. It's even with the staff, you know, for them it's good mm-hmm. that you go down and see them and everything. Mm-hmm. Gives them motivation.
Exactly.
They feel part of a bigger group, mm-hmm. which counts a lot for them. So we do visit. Normally I get involved more at the beginning, the setup,
or
with the partners, if there are partners.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the rest of the team, they frequent on a regular basis.
And what's your kind of long-term plan in Africa?
You know, a long-term plan is we want to, ambitious as it sounds, be the leaders of sports in Africa.
Okay.
We have the brands to do it.
Okay. Of course.
We have some stuff in progress which can get us on a stronger footing to do it. So that is our longer-term strategy. We do fashion as well. So we've got, let's say, these two areas and want to focus on them. We can't go too wide because we need to
but
focus.
Become leaders in Africa.
We need to be process. We have to have the right process. We can become leaders in Africa.
Fantastic. Carl, your long-term game.
Well, I mean, we're quite a young team and they say we've really enjoyed the experience. So we want to grow it, you know. We have the backing of our shareholders and our board, you know. So we want to replicate what we've done so far. The opportunities are not there. Are there? As in, it's not a matter of not having opportunities. The opportunities are. The biggest challenge is building the team, the capacity to do it. You know, to go for them. You know, so our plan is to look at other countries in East Africa, and even beyond that. Obviously, we still focus on North Africa, where we've been for a longer time. But there's definitely scope for growth, and we want to go for it. Basically,
absolutely great, Carl. Chris, really great to have you here and to have your kind of your insight on why, you know, a lot of companies are kind of off to Africa because it's such an interesting opportunity.
In this series, we talk to experts and entrepreneurs on leadership and management issues. We have episodes on emerging out of a crisis, driving innovation, the digital imperative, attracting talent, seizing key opportunities, and the leadership lessons we can learn from the world of sport. The series also includes 4 interviews with international entrepreneurs based in Malta. International Insight was originally recorded for Trade Malta and made possible thanks to HSBC.